Hello, and welcome to the Monthly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting some of the comics we got this month, a few from DC, a few from Marvel, and a few from some of the other publishers. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. In this monthly comic spot, I'm joined by James. We're going to discuss some of the comics we got in October 2024. James, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing all right. I got 56 comics this time around. Wow. My total was like over $262.
Wow.
I mean, these things at cover price are averaging almost $4.70.
Yeah, it's gotten expensive. Really, really expensive. And there's no end in sight on that front, it seems like, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was surprised how many of the things I get are at that $4.99 price point. And I think one of the ones that really frustrated me the most was Action Comics going weekly at that price.
Yeah, that's kind of ridiculous. Weekly is, in my opinion, too much. It's just too much for the creative team. And then if you're swapping teams, what are we doing? You know, a bunch of short stories. Usually when a book goes weekly, I go out the door.
I was okay with the weekly concept, but in the past, when publishers have done that, particularly DC, they do it at a lower price point.
Yeah.
In other words, they don't put that backup feature in there and inflate it by that dollar.
Yeah. Now you're getting the weekly at $5. So in a long month, that's $25.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of money.
5 week month. So
yeah. $25 for one title is freaking expensive if you're paying full freight, which thank God we're not.
Yeah, but I mean, percentage-wise, I mean, the discount, yada, yada, it still works out to almost, not quite, but almost 10% of what I bought this month.
Which is crazy. Do you get 10% of your joy from Action Comics?
No, I don't think so.
I'm sorry, I should be so cynical.
I'm not sure I should quantify where I'm getting my joy from in the comics these days.
Yeah.
I am noticing a trend of, yeah, this may get off the list, this may get off the list, and jaded reader, sure, probably, but some of it is I just don't think I'm the target audience they're going after.
Now, I can see that, and we'll discuss that as we get into this stuff, but I'm noticing a trend, and I know this sounds weird, but I feel like they have two comics. DC especially is doing this. Like, for example, this month they had Batman and Robin and Batman and Robin Year One. Two different Batman and Robins, one aimed at maybe a different reader set than Batman and Robin Year One, which is trying to go to those nostalgic 50-year-old or 60-year-old readers. And the other one's trying to go towards the new hip younger reader. And maybe that's what they're doing. I don't know.
I am noticing that kind of fracturing of the game plan at a lot of publishers.
Yep.
Because I definitely think there's a lot more nostalgia titles.
Yep.
I'd put a lot of the indie books I'm getting in that category. And I also think at Marvel and DC, we're seeing a lot of facsimile editions.
Tons of them.
I mean, they've done entire facsimile editions, issue by issue, of Crisis and Secret Wars, kind of in parallel, which is just mind-boggling. And I'm wondering, between that, between the Ultimate Universe having started back up at Marvel, Absolute over at DC, again, there's that fracturing of, I mean, it was never as simple as everything was part of the core continuity at each publisher, and that's the way it was. Because they always had Elseworlds titles, or What If titles, or you know, what have you, over the decades. But I would be curious to see if the percentage of content, both by title and by story page at Marvel and DC, of how much is in that core universe at each company, how that's fluctuated over time, because it feels like it's in a low point right now.
Yeah, I would agree. It feels like things are at a low point, and I've heard it said, if things don't work with All In, you know, people, it could be bombastic statements, you know, which things tend to be like that. Well, DC may be all out. Maybe they license comics out. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but, you know, people have speculated and said things aren't well. And you don't really have the numbers like you and Sam used to go over back in the day, and Eric. And that would be eye-opening right now, whereas everything's so fractured. We don't know how these things are doing. All I know is it feels like they're not doing well.
Not having the numbers certainly colors my opinions a little bit in terms of I followed them for, geez, since before the turn of the century when I was looking to go into publishing and stuff, before I started putting it on the website, and then, you know, that was even 8-10 years before I started doing any podcasting about it. So that colors my perception, knowing that the trend is always down.
Yeah.
That I can't imagine they're doing something like restarting the Ultimate Universe or creating the Absolute Universe or doing all those facsimiles and things like that out of a creative epiphany or something. It seems like some of this, like with the facsimiles, is easy money. Some of this other stuff is hedging of the bets of, well, if our main books aren't working, what if we try as an experiment an offshoot, not risk the main books, but completely reinvent all the characters?
Yeah.
See if the problems they're having are the characters that have sustained them for decade upon decade upon decade are suddenly broken.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, me too. It almost feels like a grasping at straws trying to make something work. And when that happens, it makes me think nothing's really working. And it worries me for the creators, for what does a Marvel and a DC or a Disney and a Warner Brothers or whatever the company is, Discovery Time Warner, do they really need to do comics when they're looking at this? This is literally a rounding error. And they said, oh, okay, well, there's other things that come from it, the creative juices. But I could see an executive head saying, well, we have creative people who work in Hollywood.
Yeah, and that's the flaw with the R&D kind of defense of, oh, well, Marvel and DC, they're the IP factory for the movies and TV.
Not really.
The movie and TV, they just reinvent the stuff anyways.
Yeah, like to that point exactly. Two of my favorite things that came out, if you go back and you look at TV shows, you know, Marvel, DC things, like I like that Joker movie. It didn't really feel like it had anything to do with DC. Anyone watching it didn't know.
I haven't watched it yet. Yeah.
Not the second one, but the original one.
I haven't watched the first one yet.
Oh, okay, okay. And then I liked the Penguin TV show. And once again, it felt like I could be watching The Sopranos.
Yeah, from what little I've seen, because again, I haven't watched that yet. I haven't watched The Batman yet. And part of it is DC has gotten to the point where I don't feel the need to watch their movies when they first come out.
Yeah, you don't really need to, because eventually it'll show up on Max and I can watch it for free. And that's literally how I watch everything. I watch it on Max. I can watch the Marvel stuff on Disney Plus. That kind of got broken with me with COVID, going to the movie.
And I'm somebody who's got like half the run of Batman and Detective Comics, and I'm not currently getting either title.
Yeah, yeah. Did you jump back on Detective when Tom Taylor took it over?
No, but I've been curious about it. Has that been good?
I think I'm looking through my list. I did get the first issue, and I will let you know.
Fair enough, because I am curious about that. If I get good word of mouth, because he's on it. Who's the artist on that?
That I can't remember for the life of me.
I want to say it's like Michael Janin or somebody else that looked really good. It looked like a good creative team.
It was decent. And I will say, wasn't one of my favorites, but it was an okay start. I didn't feel jaded like when I was reading Batman, like this sucks is how I felt when I was reading a lot of Batman. It wasn't stellar, but it was decent. I'll just leave it at that.
It's funny because I'm finding myself kind of tugged in two directions. One of, I want to prune some stuff off my list.
Yeah.
And two, I want to find some new stuff I want to read.
Yeah, that's how I was. I literally only picked it up because of Tom Taylor, hoping that maybe it was a good Batman book, because all the Batman books I've been getting, I'm like, nah, this isn't good. This isn't good. This isn't good.
Well, if you or listeners chime in and convince me to get it, I'm open to that. That's one I've been considering.
All right, cool. And I do have it. It's 1090 is where he picked it up.
Cool, cool. Well, shall we actually dive into DC?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. I think there were a couple of things we talked about talking about. I guess that's the way to say it.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do that.
I think the thing we absolutely wanted to talk about was both Absolute Power, the Absolute Universe, and the things related, including the DC All-In special and that Green Arrow stuff. Did Absolute Power number 4 land the ending for you?
I felt confused by it. It wasn't a bad issue, but I felt like so much stuff happened off-panel, and I don't know where it happened.
That's fair. I thought it was a decent-ish end to the event. Some of it was the expected of, oh, there's the betrayal. Oh, somebody's still alive. Oh, this happens.
Yeah.
We knew these things were coming because we're a trained audience these days.
Yes.
There was a little bit with, okay, let's swap the status quo for a couple of things and whatnot. And it's like, I'm curious where this will play out. I think there's a title or two coming up that maybe some of it. And I think some of what you were wondering about and where did this happen or whatnot, we actually see in Green Arrow 350 in flashback with the, and this is all the stuff we didn't tell you because then the story would have made sense.
Yes, exactly. Because I was reading it and it didn't give you the warning to read something first, another book first. And so you go into this and so much stuff happened out of the book. I was like, where did this happen? Where did this battle? What? And that's what I was doing when I was reading it. I'm like, so I just kind of rolled with it. All right, this happened. I missed it.
A lot of this was via flashback explaining stuff we'd been told had happened.
Yep.
That we should have seen a little earlier. There was one or two pieces of information like Amanda Waller had that I don't think she should have at that point.
Yep.
I did think overall it was a good issue repositioning Ollie a bit.
Yes.
While respecting what had gone before.
Yes, I agree.
This actually got me more interested in reading what's coming up with Green Arrow.
Yeah, I would agree. One thing I was going to ask you is, you know, in Hal Jordan, Green Lantern, he's lacking some willpower. I didn't know he could get charged that way, in that manner, because he had some flashes touch him. Is that a thing?
Well, it is now.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, I read these things and I'm like, did that ever happen? Where did this begin? So this is a new thing.
The where did this begin? It reminds me of a comedian that I've only caught bits and pieces of, Nat Bargatze. I mean, what I've seen of him, I liked, but he seems to have this catchphrase of nobody knows.
Yeah.
You know, so where did this begin? Nobody knows. You know, kind of here, I guess.
That's how I felt. I felt like a little bit off kilter, like out of balance because stuff would happen. I'm like, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. And I'm like, okay, this is a new thing. But I'm like questioning myself, did I miss a book? Like, where did this start happening? How did this happen?
There have been times where the emotional support of others have lent aid or whatnot, but usually when a Green Lantern is getting that kind of willpower support, it is from other Green Lanterns who are, you know, trained in specifically that branch of willpower with the rings, yada, yada, yada.
Not a Flash.
Not any old Flash.
Yeah.
And it was like every Flash except Barry, who would have been the one who could have had the emotional connection or whatnot. And if they'd played it with the others tried, it didn't work, but Barry comes in who, you know, even if he's powerless at that point, he's got the emotional resonance with Hal.
That would have been cool.
That could have worked.
And you'd be like, oh, that's a neat thing. So even though he doesn't have his power, he can be useful in this way.
Well, and imagine if they had played into Barry having had the Blue Lantern Hope power at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could have even played in the classic almost bromance aspect of those two with the buddy cop stories they've told over the decades and had that channel in kind of the love emotional spectrum aspect of they are brothers in arms kind of a deal.
That would have been cool.
I mean, there's so many ways they could have done.
Yeah.
And what they did wasn't bad. It just wasn't great.
I agree. So that's where I was with this. Like, it wasn't a bad book. I just felt like too much stuff happened, not in this book, that left you clueless. Especially if you just read the main title, you're going to be clueless with what's going on.
Yeah. What did you think of the All-In special?
It was okay. It was good enough. I can't say I was excited. And it was a flip book, which did annoy me a little bit. You know, half is the Snyder writing from the perspective of Darkseid. And that part was kind of cool. And then you flip to the Justice League Unlimited by Joshua Williamson, which was cool. And I love that they have Sam Peary, I guess his name is, on the art.
Yeah, yeah.
Which means he's not going to be on Wonder Woman.
Well, he had some time off when they were doing the three issues that Shanghai'd the book.
Yeah, that's true. And it seems like everyone's in the Justice League now.
Basically, yes.
Yeah, everyone's in the Justice League. You get a bigger base. Oh. It seems a little pokey until Darkseid shows up. Things get a little dark, but I kind of liked it. It was good.
So did you read the Darkseid part first and then the Justice League side?
Exactly. I started with Darkseid.
I read it the other way.
I didn't know it was a flip book. And so I was reading all this Darkseid. I was like, okay. And then I got to the middle. I was like, oh, I didn't realize it was a
yeah.
flip book. So I read it in reverse order, I think.
Well, one was called Alpha. One was called Omega. I read Alpha first.
And I read Omega first, which might have given me a different feeling, because
There were a couple of things I found kind of interesting about the whole thing. First off, why jump over 50 days?
Yes.
I mean, technically they say 52, but we saw 2 days later in Absolute Power number 4.
Yeah.
But this gives them almost a 2-month gap to have changed things up a little bit, which I guess they felt they needed. And 52, because it's DC and they're obsessed with the number.
Yeah, exactly. There's an obsession there.
The Justice League finally getting identity cards like the Avengers have had for decades. Kind of funny. I do like kind of building out the Justice League the way they have. It reminds me a ton of the Justice League Unlimited cartoon, which is not accidental or a bad thing. And kind of having everybody be, every team is almost a sub-team of the Justice League now. I'm curious how that plays out, because there are things they're pulling from both the Justice League Unlimited cartoon and the Young Justice cartoon. And on the one hand, I think that's cool. On the other hand, I think that's backwards, because having the source material pull from the derivative material is backwards.
Yeah.
But if it's a good era of Justice League, I can live with it. We did get a Legion of Superheroes in here, which is not how I wanted to see them. But Legion lore is baked into this story in a couple of different ways. So I'm really expecting a Legion series to get announced soon.
Yeah, I could see that happening. So overall, I mean, did you like it then? I mean, I wish I would have started the other way, but I had already read the Darkseid stuff, so it was too late at that point.
I liked it. I didn't love it. I liked the Justice League aspects of it.
Yeah.
The whole, I mean, I've never been a huge Darkseid fan, and that whole side of the book and where they're going with that and the Absolute Universe, not working for me.
I can see that. And that's why I felt a little weird. I'm like, wow, we're really focusing on Darkseid. And I didn't realize there's a whole other thing and I was going to flip to read it. And that's literally just the way they stuck it in my bag and board. So I read it that way. Yeah.
Now, that brings us to the Absolute Universe. And we got Absolute Batman and Absolute Wonder Woman this time.
Yes. And Sin will have the other one, the Absolute
Superman.
What was it last? Superman.
What's
yeah.
the other one?
What's
that
the other one?
Says something right there. That says a lot right there. I got to say, both of these for me, it's like, it's interesting, but it sure isn't Batman. It sure isn't Wonder Woman. It's a very dystopic one. It wasn't clicking with me. Gut feeling is this Absolute Universe lasts maybe a year or two and then be gone.
Yeah.
And I'm not hooked by the concept or the story, for these two at least. And at $5 a shot, I'm not interested enough to follow. So these fell into the new slash drop category. I just need to figure out, do I do it on this next order form or what?
Yeah, I'm reading them right now. They have a very indie comics feel, almost like a fan fiction type feeling. But literally, hey, let's take everything and change it. That was the take with it. Especially the Wonder Woman got a little weird, you know?
Yeah, very weird.
I was just like, literally, what the hell? And then with the Absolute Batman, it was just Nick Dragata being the artist. The thing that I know him the best for is East of West, which he did with Jonathan Hickman over at Image. And he has a certain look to his art. And you see it, like, Bruce has this big, you know, almost like Bane-like, juiced up, roided up body, but he has a baby's face, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a Dragata thing, and he does it a lot. And I'm just like, it felt so weird. It felt like an indie comic, even though it's not. And the way they show Alfred in there, I'm like, I think this is something after about 3, 4, 5, 6 issues, but when people are reading it, that new will wear off. And when the new wears off, people are going to jump ship.
I'm just much more efficient then, because it already wore off.
Ah, I love this new cynic, John.
Well, I mean, the basic premise of these titles is the problem with the properties is the property.
Yeah. And this is two of those books that I felt like, hey, let's get this new readership in. There is no new readership. I'm going to say that now, definitively. There's no new readership. And if it is, they're not paying $5 to read this little floppy thing. So with that being, it's not aimed at, I feel like, John, who's been reading Batman for 40 years, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And so, okay, I can enjoy it a little bit, but it's not really for me. It's something for, I feel like it's written for like a teen or a 20-year-old. And so that's where the disconnect is. It's written very indie comic-like. And so I can see how people will jump ship who are the comics buyers. And that doesn't bode well when you don't have another output other than floppy comics at DC. That's literally it.
Yeah, and for me, it's not that I can't enjoy it. It's that I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah, I see that. Like, I liked it because it was new. And I was like, oh, that's cool. But I literally put it on. I'm like, when the newness wears off, I can see this is already getting a little grating on me. I think it's good for like 6 issues. I feel like I don't need to read any more than 6 issues of it.
I don't even know that I need to read that much of it. And I'm sure it's going to tie back into the mainstream and I'll be lost because I didn't follow it. But I think I can live with that.
Yeah, and they'll call it this Earth 752. Who knows? You'll have a new Earth.
Well, if you go back to the multiverse guidebook, there were 6 or 7 Earths that were kind of squirreled away for later use.
Here it
and
is.
I don't think this is one of them, though, because they did the expansion to the Omniverse and down, and it's like a damn accordion with the cosmic physics and stuff at DC.
Yeah.
Inflate it, deflate it, reflate it, whatever.
The sad part is, now that they created this, they're going to have to revisit it to keep the, you know, the IP and to keep the...
They will. They don't have to, because we've gone quite a while between the Stan Lee stuff coming back or the Tangent stuff and some stuff like that.
Yeah.
but we'll see if it catches any audience and if it goes anywhere or not.
Yeah, we'll see.
One other thing I did want to talk about.
Okay.
Was Justice Society of America number 12.
Okay.
Because I had thought number 11 was a pretty good end cap for the series.
Yes.
And it turns out it was. This was not a JSA issue. This was a Stars and Stripes issue.
Yeah, I hated this book.
I thought it was good. It was just absolutely not what I was expecting or wanting out of a JSA issue.
I hated it because it's just full-page splashes, the whole issue of art.
Well, but they're covering some of the major points of this era of the JSA.
Yeah.
I would have preferred, like, Michael Janin art to Tognock, and I like Tognock's art. I also appreciated on those splashes there was minimal captions to get in the way of the art.
Yeah, it was literally just an art book.
Exactly. For a poster type thing, it was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's what you're getting. I thought it was going to be a comic, and I thought, okay, 11 was the ending, and then we got this, and it was literally just pictures, which was fine, but I thought it'd be a comic, and it really didn't feel like it.
I thought it'd be a JSA issue, not a Stargirl issue.
Exactly. Stargirl wandering the pages. Yeah, exactly.
Now, the thing that threw me the most was the opening scene at the baseball game.
Yeah.
It's like a Little League game. We got this kid, Robbie. His last name is Reed. And I'm like, ooh, this is the kid from the original Dial H for Hero. I wonder where they're going with this.
Nowhere. Nowhere. That's where we're going. Right.
Nobody
down the tube.
Knows.
Yeah. One thing I will tell you, Detective, I thought it was okay. So you might want to sample it. Eric could probably still get you a copy because I think he had a few if you want to try it out. And it was setting up something to happen with Joe Cool. That's all I'll tell you about it in case you want to read it.
I'll do a little research and stuff before making a decision.
It was something like for a first issue and he's transitioning. It was like a B- type thing. But I think it was good enough where I'm like, okay, let's see what he can do. It's setting up some stuff with Joe Cool.
Got it. I did have actually one other question on the All-In stuff.
Okay, what is that?
The covers. Are they working for you or not? Because a lot of them have the character in an almost random heroic pose with their logo or something behind them.
It's okay. It's not something I would have chosen, but it works. Okay. It doesn't irritate me. I'll just say that.
Okay. Does not irritate you.
It was okay. I mean, it wasn't great.
That's glowing praise right there. But, you know, I didn't mind it either, but I question anytime they do that where it's I have no clue what happens in this issue because it's such a generic cover.
That's the thing. Yeah, it's kind of weird. It didn't upset me or irritate me, but I thought they could have had much better covers for the comic. And so that's where I was like, it was okay. It's a cover. It's not something I'd point to.
Yeah, I'm curious how many more of these we're going to get because it seemed to hit maybe mid. Actually, it came early in the month. So I don't know. I'm curious.
Yeah. Hey, one other thing before we leave DC because we spent some time here. Nightwing, that we got the last issue. Did you feel like it stuck the landing with Tom Taylor and Bruno Redondo?
We got the last issue from them, and then the following week we got the next issue, the next team.
Yeah, what how'd that work for you?
I thought they basically landed the ending of the years-long run in the Heartless saga.
I agree.
I still think Heartless played out over way too long of a time.
I agree.
But, I mean, overall, Tom Taylor and Bruno Redondo did a great run on the title. Yes, there were some digressions into events. Yes, there were some gimmick issues. Yes, Heartless took way, way too long. And there's some other stuff that I would have liked to have seen get a little more screen time and stuff. But I was happy with how they ended it. Sad that they ended it, because again, I think they're both very talented and worked well together.
Yeah.
And then when we got the 119 the next week, we start with a setup of these new crime bosses in Bloodhaven, and then kaboom, they're gone. Okay, that was fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is okay. It's not as good as the creative team. I honestly didn't expect it to be. But it was good enough for me to not say, I've got to take this off my list.
That's exactly where I was. It was good enough, and I was like, it's not bad. I'll give it a shot. And it was a decent transition. Yeah. And by the way, the ending, it was, I felt like you, it stuck the ending. I really enjoyed it. And it made me angry at one point because, you know, putting the toys away and kind of resetting some stuff. And with a side character that I'd grown to love in there, I was very unhappy with that. But it was a good issue because.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they had a game plan going into it. And I think they pretty much executed on it fairly well. It's just a little sad that it's over. And it's going to be a while, I think, before we get another team that's kind of hitting their stride as much as Taylor and Redondo did here. I forget the team that was on Grayson, but that was a good run, even though it was a very different non-Nightwing run.
Yeah.
So I hope the new creative team of Dan Waters and Dexter Soy kind of resonate with me over the course of this arc. because I'd really hate to drop this title.
Me too. It was a decent start, though, so I'm happy for that.
Yeah. Anything else at DC?
Yeah, let's flip it over to Marvel. I'm going to go and sort my list right now.
All right.
All right. Believe it or not, this is one of the months, and I think it's because of the Absolute stuff, I got less from Marvel than I did from DC.
I got less from Marvel than I got from DC, and I got less from DC than I got from the others. And I think next month I'm going to get even less from Marvel.
Yeah. Indies is biggest chunk of what I get now, believe it or not.
Things that I have the final issue I'm getting of are MYX, Phoenix, Scarlet Witch, X-Men, which had two issues. I'm considering dropping X-Force and X-Factor, although I haven't pulled the plug on those, or Uncanny X-Men, starting to wear a little thin. Mm-hmm. Captain America, really depends how this arc goes, because I thought it was, it was. And then, did you get Iron Man number one?
I did. Did you like it?
No. It did not win me over. I mean, I've seen the Armor Wars before. I've seen Tony lose his company before. I've seen him get knocked down and have to rebuild before. I was, maybe hoping to see Iron Man being a heroic Iron Man.
Yeah, it wasn't bad, but I'm like, it was nothing new because we've seen this story before. I felt like everything that we're doing here, I'm like, okay, that's happened before. And it just felt a little bit weird. It's like, I felt like I've read the story before and yet it's brand new. And it wasn't bad. It's just rehashing old ideas.
Old ideas and it wasn't good. You would think somebody would do their research and dig around and stuff before doing a story like this, particularly somebody like Spencer Ackerman, who is a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist.
You would think so.
But it feels like he's done the research and is just retelling us. I mean, not retelling an exact story, but so many of these things we've seen before. One of the switches of the status quo that just was happenstance turned into a huge plot point in the issue. And kind of, if only he'd been wearing his other pants kind of a deal. You know, it's like, it just blew my mind.
Yeah.
So this one, particularly, it's $4.99 this time, but it's $3.99 going forward. I've got the next two issues on pre-order. I don't know that I'm going to be getting more than that.
Yeah, I've got the next couple on order, and we'll see. That's where I'm with a holding pattern. An interesting thing, the thing that I noticed, the reason why I'm getting less Marvel is because of what they're putting out, but literally what they're putting out. They've gone heavy into the Venom War thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm all out on Venom War. They went to these weird Spider-Man offshoots, you know, like Spider-Boy and...
Well, Spider Society and all that stuff, yeah.
There's about 10 books that are spider stuff, and I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm trying Amazing Spider-Man for next month because they took the writer off there. I can't remember the one that I didn't like. And then they went really heavy, almost all in, on the relaunch of the X-Books. And I don't want to be that heavy into the X-Books, so I'm getting books here and there based on creative teams, and they keep coming out with, oh, this is just this character, this is just this character, and I'm like, by this writer who I don't really like, I'm like, no, I'm not buying that stuff. I don't need that. I don't need a magic book, you know? That's just not where I am.
I don't mind being heavy or not heavy into the X-Books or whatever. I'm just not enjoying the X-Books.
Yeah, I felt like they relaunched and they went full on the 90s feel and vibe.
Yeah, in all the wrong ways.
In all the wrong ways. And that, I was like, I thought Krakoa was not great, but there were some things that really excited me inside of Krakoa. And nothing here is really exciting. Very little is.
Yeah, again, I've already dropped a number of the titles, NXY, Scarlet Witch, X-Factor, X-Men, like I said. Uncanny and X-Force are potentially going to be next. I'm liking Exceptional X-Men, but this was another one where it was heavy on Kitty and light on Emma Frost, so they still haven't gotten the team together. Of course, they're only two issues in, so go figure. I did like the Mystique issue.
That one I didn't get. How did you like it?
It's funny, because it's as much a Nick Fury Jr. story as a Mystique story.
That's funny.
And I think it's a five-issue miniseries, but I'm not positive of that, because they don't tell us these days. We might get some fun spy action here, which I'm hoping. Final page had me a little concerned, because if what I think happened, they overstepped, it'll have to be undone. And regardless, we'll spin the story into a major kind of grudge match direction, which I don't think is a good thing. So it shows promise, but could very easily go off the rails, and I could be here next month saying, yep, I'm off.
Yeah. Are you getting the Phoenix title?
I was.
Okay. I almost dropped it. Issue 3 had the Black Order showed up, and I was like, okay, that's cool. I like the Black Order, but it's gone totally cosmic. Phoenix number 4, I enjoyed it because of a character that they brought in.
I kind of figured you'd like the character they brought in.
Yeah, and so that got me a little bit excited. That I was like, oh, I really enjoy this. Let's have some fun with this. That did enough. I'm like, will they be there long term? I don't think so, but I'm enjoying it right now. This issue I thought was fun. One of the best issues of Phoenix that they've had yet, and still in that B range.
It's better than it did for me. I think they are overpowering an already way overpowered character.
Yes, they are.
And I think that is just a bad story direction to go in creatively.
They're making her a god.
They already did that. Now they're powering her up.
Yeah. And all the mutants were gods, you know, kind of because they got around death. But this is to the nth degree. It's unbelievable what they're doing with her. I don't know how they're going to undo it, but they have to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't see a good reset on this. And I don't think needing the reset is a good thing to begin with.
Yeah. They've gone too far.
I dropped it. I thought splitting her and Cyclops up across the galaxy was a bad idea. Overpowering her was a bad idea. And I just don't think this title is a good idea.
Yeah, I can see where you're going with that.
This is one of those things where I think continuity plays not only in respecting the past, but respecting what you're telling now to where it leads to a better future. And I don't think this puts the Marvel continuity in a better place.
No, you're setting her up where basically her only villain or the character she can face off is either Thanos or Galactus.
No, the only one she can face off is herself.
Herself, yeah.
That's it.
Because she's too powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is weird. Yeah.
I'm finding right now, really, Mystique and Exceptional X-Men are probably the two X-books I may end up staying with.
I could see that.
Even those aren't guaranteed, yeah. The others are falling by the wayside quickly.
Yeah, the others are kind of meh. They're all just kind of like, not feeling good.
Well, I mean, out of the 16 comics I've got, five of them, that's it. And four of them are, I'm thinking about dropping.
Oh, how about the Wolverines? Did you already drop them?
I didn't even get that.
Okay. Wolverine was against Wendigo. Wendigo? I don't know how you say that. The things from Canada.
The things from Canada. That's Alpha Flight.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, human flesh, what is it called? Yeah. Wendigo?
Either way is fine.
Yeah, well, however you say it, that's what it is.
Yeah, and I've seen him go up against that stuff a lot, so.
What's weird right now is the things that I'm enjoying the most at Marvel are the Ultimate books, which is not good because those are not the main Marvel 616 books.
You know, it's interesting because I thought Ultimate Spider-Man number 10 was probably the best issue of the run so far.
It really was, because it was so different than anything I've ever read.
Well, and it was pretty much a full story in the issue.
Yeah, it was kind of awesome because it's literally investigative reporting, you know, but done in an interesting manner.
I was expecting a different last name for the reporter at the end.
Yeah.
When the one they got made sense, but not what I would have expected.
Yeah.
I think there was another name they could have borrowed from the mainstream universe as if this guy existed and he doesn't, kind of a thing, or maybe he will later kind of deal, you know? There's fun stuff they could do. It was a satisfying issue, and I needed that. This is one of those where I swing hot and cold. I like it, but it's slow, and this sped stuff up.
Yeah, it did. It sped it up quite a bit, and I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I do have concerns about the next issue.
Oh, why is that? What is the next one?
We get Black Cat.
Oh, okay.
And they've flipped the ethnicity of her.
Oh, okay.
Gosh, that's a little on the nose for Black Cat.
Like Black Panther back in the 70s, I guess.
I guess. I don't know. And yeah, that's just concept-wise, I think it's a bad idea. It could be great execution. I hope it is.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
And then Ultimates was interesting because we got a whole new Hawkeye there.
Yeah. That was kind of cool. I liked it, and I don't want to say I love that comic, but it was interesting. A big fight between, you know, Cap and basically the new Hawkeye, which I'm going to say I like the new Hawkeye. I didn't know how I felt about it, but when they came up with the name and everything, I was like, all right, that works. That's kind of cool.
I like it, and I like them playing up kind of the pairing of Hawkeye and Cap, because that's a classic one in the mainstream universe.
Exactly.
So it was satisfying. I'm just curious. Again, how long is this Ultimate stuff going to be around? I know we've got the event coming up that they keep counting down towards. What is their long-term game plan for this universe?
Yeah, hopefully something good, but I think long-term, it's on a ticking clock, just like the old Ultimate universe.
Well, either it's successful and that eventually kills it because it's around long enough to have so much baggage people can't follow it, or it's not successful and that kills it.
Yeah, one or the other. Let's hope it's successful.
And it's one thing, if you want to tell something without the impenetrability of a decades-old continuity, the trick isn't to ditch the continuity. The trick is to write accessibly so that continuity is clear to new readers.
Which is the way they used to write comics in the 80s and the early 90s. Literally telling you things you need to know to understand the character in any given issue.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's rocket science, but they don't seem to kind of go down that path.
I agree. So that's Marvel in a nutshell.
Yeah, pretty much.
Nothing else I really need to point out. I mean, there's a lot of, it's okay.
Yeah, that's where it is. I'm just curious how much of this I'm going to have next month and the month after. Because there are a couple of these that if, like, the pitch for the next Captain America story arc doesn't please me, boom, it's gone. And I've been reading Cap forever and a day. Probably longer than most other Marvel titles. So.
Yeah, I can see that. I really can.
In general, that there are a lot of these that just aren't working for me and I'm cutting the cord.
That's a better place to be, mentally and budget-wise.
Absolutely, absolutely. Shall we jump to the other publishers?
Yeah, filter my list now. All right, this is the biggest one for both of us. And what would you like to talk about?
Let's see, I got 21 comics out of my total of 55, 56-ish, thereabouts. So this was most of what I got.
Yeah, this is my biggest one with 34.
I want to start actually with Space Ghost number 6. Are you reading that?
I'm not. How is that working for you?
This one was really good. I think this issue was both standalone in terms of there was a beginning, middle, and end of a thing, but it's also playing up of what happened last issue, so directly the aftermath of that. And I like how it really helped define and help us understand some of the characters, how they get along, how they miscommunicate at times, or butt heads at times, whatever. But I think they're really giving these characters a lot more depth and solidity than they ever got in the cartoon.
Very cool.
So I thought that was a good issue.
Very nice. Well, I'll tell you about a new one that I got that was just, it was good because it was unexpected. I went into it with no expectations, and I was literally just taking a flyer. Okay, it was Lilith, number one from Vault Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a pleasant surprise because, like, when you go into it not expecting anything, you can almost trip over the bar that you've set for yourself. But like I said, Vault published it. It was Corin Howell. And I'm like, who is that? I don't know. Never heard of him. He did the art and the writing, Corin did. And it felt like a comic I could see as a TV series. Lilith is not a straight up vampire, but she's a vampire type character. But instead of, like, you know, just going for, I'm going to suck your blood, she eats people and has a cat who cleans up the leftovers. That's kind of the setup for it. And the comic alludes to her being from a place like hell, so I guess she could be a demon. I really don't know. And she has a really sassy personality with some wit and comedy in the book. And it's done in just the right way, where instead of it being a cliche trope, it comes off as her being a character that really worked for me. She vibed and she had some personality to her.
Cool.
And there's a twist where she meets a nerdy girl who Lilith is thinking about eating, until we see a book that the girl is carrying. And all of a sudden, I think they're pairing up to uncover some stuff and become a duo. And I thought that was really cool. It was a fun setup. I don't think it'll go very long. It'll probably go for 5 or 6 issues, but a ton of fun for something I didn't expect.
Cool. Glad you liked it.
Yeah. How about you?
Space Usagi, White Star Rising number 1 from Dark Horse.
Space Usagi. All right.
This is related to Usagi Yojimbo, obviously, Stan Sakai and stuff.
Yeah.
But instead of being set in, like, the Edo era of Japan, this is set in some kind of nebulous space future stuff. So imagine everything you like about Usagi Yojimbo, everything you like about Star Wars, and just kind of mashed in a very Usagi kind of way.
Okay.
And it really mixed the fun stuff. If you've got things that it feels Star Wars-ish without being derivative, and it still is a very Usagi sort of a tale, and it worked on a lot of levels for me. I thought it was just a ton of fun. This is, I think, only, I want to say, maybe a 3-issue miniseries or something, or short, I mean, 5 tops. And I like the original Usagi. I'd be happy getting more of that, but I was happy getting this too.
Very cool. Nice. Well, I'm going to tell you about a new number one that I picked up. Another number one, because Lilith was a number one too. I was going to talk about Nightclub, but the only thing I'll tell you about Nightclub too is that it's almost like the Empire Strikes Back on the second volume. The bad guys are starting to win. And I think it's a perfect superhero book. But I'm going to talk about another superhero book, and it's Mark Miller again. Jupiter's Legacy, finale number 1. Did you ever read Jupiter's Legacy in the past?
I did, and I picked this up, and I read this.
Okay, did you like it?
It's been long enough since I've been in this narrative universe that I, like, vaguely remember where things were at, sort of?
Yes.
And I thought it was okay, but I was, like, puzzled at the end as to what's going on there. But I think that was the point of the end, too.
Me too. So that's exactly kind of my notes on here. I put, like, I've enjoyed Jupiter's Legacy, although I got lost with the huge gaps between the series because he took years off there at Netflix, you know? And so I was just trying to remember what was going on. And so all the superheroes are kind of trapped in that foreign world. And there's literally a fight for survival between the two world superhero groups. And it was kind of cool. Characters are battling and characters have died. And the comic starts off feeling pretty kind of epic.
Yeah.
And I think it's something where if we read it all together later on back to back, it might be like, wow, this is really cool. This is something that was really epic. He just took too long off, is what I felt.
I was wondering that too, and I was debating, is this something where we wanted to kind of go through the different miniseries in rapid fire or something? And I don't know that I'm quite ready to pull the trigger on that.
Yeah.
But if there's a lot of demand for that, that'd be more likely to happen. Because there's Jupiter Legacy Volumes 1 and 2, there's Jupiter Circle Volume 1 and 2. I thought there was something else, and then there's this. And that stretched out over, geez, I want to say 10 years, maybe?
Yeah. It's something that I think, like, if we did a back issue on it, a back issue spotlight, we could have a lot of fun with it, and it may read better having it kind of condensed together. And the same thing, like, with Nightclub, if you're into Spider-Man, it's that superhero thing where you may be able to have fun with it, whichever way we go. But Jupiter's Legacy is definitely superheroics that you like, and I was like, it feels like it can be pretty epic. It's just been so long, and I'd like to go back and visit it.
Yeah, I think if we were to revisit it, doing a back issue spotlight per volume miniseries, whatever you want to call it, and just keep it at a high level of, okay, what did they set up? What are they riffing on? Did it work? Did it not? How much time publishing-wise elapsed? And because if we're reading them, you know, week after week after week or whatever, I think that would give us some momentum that the series just totally lacked.
Yeah, and with that momentum, it might be like, wow, this is epic. Or, this isn't as good as I remember. And I'd like to see, you know, how it plays out reading it in that condensed style.
Yeah.
Like we're doing in Astro City.
Exactly. No? Exactly. Because I know there's a level of this that I wasn't getting because I barely remember who any of these characters are.
Exactly. That's the weird thing. It's written so well. I'm like, this is a good story. And I can't remember who half the people are. And so it's so weird because you're like, you're a little bit lost, but you're going, this is good at the same time.
I'm not going, this is good at the same time, because if it was really good, I wouldn't be lost.
Yeah,
that too. I'm saying this could be better.
Yes, it could be better.
But I'm curious if listeners would be interested in us doing that or not.
Yeah.
I'd be game for it. We would just need to figure out, okay, is it just the two volumes of Jupiter's Legacy and Jupiter's Circle and then this, or is there anything else involved? And then again, doing it to we're literally recording on a week-to-week-to-week-to-week basis kind of a deal. With obviously a week out for a monthly spotlight or something like that. But yeah.
Yeah. Almost like we did. People might not know this with the Dark Ages, you know, boom, 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 done.
Yeah. For Astro City, we recorded those and we're ahead on those just so we would remember the beginning when it ended.
Exactly. Yeah. That'd be cool.
Because again, I feel that's what this story lacked for me is context.
Me too. All right. We're on the same page.
Yeah.
Which is weird because we always are.
Not always.
Yeah. That's true.
So I've got a number one I'd like to talk about.
Okay, what's that?
It's a property I think you're aware of, because, you know, you're like on the planet. Terminator number one from Dynamite.
Oh, yeah. I did get that.
I thought it was not a bad Terminator story, both for the lead and for the backup.
I agree.
But I kept asking myself, who are these people and why should I care?
That's exactly what I wrote on here. No clue who they are. Okay, we're going with a Terminator story, but who are they? I don't know.
And I think it's a 12-issue series, and I have zero clue from the first issue of the overall premise of the series, the direction of it, what the hell's going on, what is this branch of the Terminator franchise doing? And it leans heavily on knowing the premise of the Terminator franchise and does nothing to establish that overall aspect of it in the storyline.
Yeah, if you had not seen the movies, you would have no clue what this comic is. You'd be like, what? This is weird. And I think it pulls on you and I, having seen those movies.
Well, the movies, the Sarah Connor Chronicles TV show, I've read a number of the comics, certainly not all of them. But yeah, I think everybody on the planet knows the basic premise of the first movie.
Yeah. I mean, this comic could have been John and Kay running from the Terminator. Why are they running from the Terminator? Why is it after them? We have no clue. Could have been anyone. It could be me and my wife, because you had no clue why these people are important.
Yeah. And therefore, should they live? Should they die? I mean,
who cares? Who knows? Maybe it's really critical, but right now I'm like, you almost have that feeling of who cares? I don't know if they matter.
So I would like to see context.
I agree.
I liked it, but that's a major thing for it to lack.
Yeah, that's what kind of knocked it down a little bit in the score, is I felt like I had no clue who the people were.
Yeah.
The protagonist.
Well, I don't need to know everything about them. I need to know why I should care about them.
Yeah, how are they impacting the future? Because obviously, for the Terminator to go back in time, they must matter, you would think.
They may not. Their grandkid might.
Yeah, exactly. Something. Yeah.
So, I mean, there was a part of me wondering, why don't these Terminators just go way the hell back and stop humans from existing, or plant themselves in strategic places to where they're ready when they need to be? I don't know. Half a dozen different ways they could fight the time war better.
Yeah, exactly. All right, my last one?
Yeah.
Okay, I debated on which way I was going to go because there's a few things. I'll tell you, Savage Sword of Conan was Jason Aaron's first story on it. And I think I'll go with that versus like Hyde Street, because Hyde Street was a little bit weird. Okay, Jason Aaron showed up and he's doing a new King Conan story arc inside of Savage Sword of Conan. The magazines are about 60 pages, so they're pretty big. And there were two tiny backups, like maybe a couple pages each. They felt so insignificant. The whole story is devoted to Jason Aaron, which is what they did with the first Savage Sword of Conan.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say what's weird is it didn't feel like a King Conan story, because immediately you're not focusing on him leading an army, being a king. He's in another land. He's treated kind of as an outcast. Nobody's listening to him. They know he's a king, but he's not the king of that land. And so it was kind of weird that they went that way. And also his beard, the artist who drew it to make him older, they made the middle of his beard white, which when they did that with the coloring, it almost made him look like Wolverine having mutton chops.
Oh, that's funny.
Which was so bizarre. I kept looking at him going, why does he have mutton chops? I'm like, wait a minute, he has white beard there. Okay. So anyways, there's another kingdom he visits. They're hunting for witches. The witch in question is protected by animals, so she can summon them. Polar bears are showing up to fight the people who are capturing the witches. So it's a whole play on witches, and Conan escapes with a witch and the hunt is on. That's the setup for it. It's a lot of fun, but I would not have called it a King Conan story. I would have called it an old Conan story.
It's interesting how just the packaging can make a difference on your enjoyment of the story sometimes.
It really can. They said King Conan, and I'm expecting him to be leading soldiers and leading an army.
It sets expectations, yeah.
No, he's just with a witch, a king in a land where they know he's a king, but he has no power. Which I'm like, all right, so it's just an old Conan story.
That's
all right, whatever. But I mean, it was good. I enjoyed it. I like the long form stories versus like when they take like 10 pages to four different writers. I rather them give the one writer the bulk of it and put a couple add-ons if they need to do that.
That makes sense. I would agree with that. That's usually the better way to go.
Yeah, it's more satisfying at that point. And those are the highlights to my independent reading. And I'm still loving Feral, the Cats in the Wild. I love that story.
How about Flash Gordon? Is that still working for you?
It's enjoyable. It was a very enjoyable fight issue. So I wouldn't say it's great. It's not as good as like the back issue spotlight that we did, but I'm still reading it. And I think this issue was better than the last one. It's a little more action heavy. How about you?
I thought it was decent, but there are aspects of it that feel almost more like it should be a John Carter of Mars story than a Flash Gordon story.
It does feel like John Carter of Mars now that you say it. Yeah.
So this is one that I'm debating if I stay with or not.
I can see it. Like, I could see myself being completely happy with the first six issues and departing on my way. It's not something I feel like I have to read, and it's not as good as the back issue spotlight we did, which I can't remember the writer on that.
Jeff Parker,
and he did a terrific job on it. That was almost like the perfect Flash Gordon story for me.
It was a ton of fun. I really enjoyed it. This isn't measuring up. And it's funny because out of everything I've got from the other publishers, there was a one-shot, so I'm not getting that next month. Still leaves me 20. There's Flash Gordon, which I've got another two on order, and then I think that finishes out the first arc, because I think it ends at 5.
Yeah.
Don't know that I'll pre-order beyond that. And then Free Agents, which I got the fourth issue of, but that's dropped with prejudice.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
But that still leaves me, you know, 18 things here that if they all show up next month, I'm getting. So the other publishers are actually doing better for me than either Marvel or DC, and depending how they go, possibly both.
You know what? You saying that speaks volumes, because I've always enjoyed a lot of indies more so than you. You were the big two. And I mean, I've enjoyed the big two as well, but you were way heavier percentage wise in big two. And for you to say that, I imagine there's a lot of other people who are like that. And so seeing that they pay the bills at most comic shops, you can see how the industry's hurting right now.
Yeah, it does make you wonder.
I'm just like, yeah, Marvel and DC, I don't know what they're doing, but it isn't working that well.
I think they're floundering. I think there's a lack of direction, a lack of understanding what the audience really wants out there. Mm. And I think sometimes, like you were saying with the Venom War, they go whole hog in certain directions, and that just becomes overpowering at times.
Yeah, I mean, if you come out with like 15 Venom books, or symbiote books, we'll call it that, 15, 16 symbiote books in a month, I don't like symbiotes. I just don't. And so now you have excluded me from 16 of the titles you're publishing. And then you also went heavy into the 90s X-Men, and you went heavy into these weird, obscure Spider-Man books that I'm not liking. Now it's at least half your catalog I'm not even looking at.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not good. And so I'm like, man, your spotlights should be quality and the big titles. Avengers, do Iron Man right. You just relaunched Iron Man, and it's kind of weird. It's just bizarre.
Well, for me, a lot of this comes down to the editorial.
Yeah.
They're picking these creators.
It's so bizarre. I feel like the editors don't know what they're doing. The editors in charge, I don't know why they're there. I don't know why they were hired. And I say that not to be callous, but it seems like they don't know their job. They don't know what they're supposed to be doing. They don't know how to lead and direct, and they don't know how to find talent for these books.
The funny thing about that is I think you're including under that category the editor of the X-Men stuff, which is Tom Brevoort, who's been around the block, knows what an editor does, has been a good editor in the past. He's also done some really not so great things.
Yeah.
I mean, when Civil War came out, he flat out, I think, in person lied to everybody in Chicago saying, oh yeah, it's running fine, it'll be out on time. And of course, it was massively delayed and delayed a huge chunk of the Marvel Universe to a significant degree. So I don't know if it's that. I mean, some of the editors are time-tested, others are not. Certainly, some are better at their job than others, certainly.
I think it's a talent acquisition right now. These editors pick people to be on the titles, and the creators they're putting on these titles are not good.
I think it's more a budget thing than talent acquisition. I think if they had the money,
that's true,
they could get the talent they wanted, but if this is the talent they wanted and money's no object kind of a deal, that's a different problem.
That's true. With the budgets that are allocated, they can take one or two swings for the fences, which may be a Scott Snyder doing whatever. He came back. Jeff Johnson's gone, so maybe that freed up the budget for Scott Snyder. Jonathan Hickman. And there's a few writers, and the rest of them are journeyman writers. And as soon as they have a popular title, and you can almost see it like clockwork, they'll write a title or two, and then boom, their image books are out. And you can just feel and see they're half-heartedly doing their big two books. They don't care.
I remember when they used to basically pull writers and artists from the smaller publishers.
Yep.
Versus, hey, let's take this guy who's written a novel or this guy who's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist. And they may be brilliant at those other jobs, or they may be somebody who's great on movies and TV. It's different, though, than writing a comic.
Yeah. Like, who was that you were just talking about, Pulitzer Prize writer? The Iron Man.
Iron Man writer, yeah.
What's his name? Ackerman?
Spencer Ackerman.
Spencer Ackerman. And I remember really popular one because I've seen the guy on TV and stuff, a novelist Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yep.
He came in, he took over Black Panther.
And Cap.
And he's gone. He's out of comics. He's not doing anything at comics. He's back just writing books. But they paid him. And I was just like, for the first couple of years, you could tell he had never written comics. And then when he started getting better at writing comics, I guess he decided he was better served spending his time writing novels.
Gotta have more money, more control, more power, flexibility, cachet, whatever, you know?
And you just think about how much money they must have paid that guy to come over and write these comics just for him to say, yeah, that's a cool thing. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I don't really want to do this. I'm not a fan of these.
Well, as much as I don't like anthology titles, if they had a few of those, they could try out some of these writers there, get them kind of up to speed and stuff, under possibly even a pseudonym and stuff, and then have them go on, do their breakthrough book as the big name they are in this other domain and stuff.
Yeah, it's true.
Interesting times. I just, again, am surprised how many things like on my Marvel list are on the I should get rid of. On the DC side, there's a fair number I'm getting rid of and a fair number that, well, I mean, Action Comics was a decent chunk of what I got. It was about a fifth of it. So it's just crazy.
I'm hoping things get better in the future, but it is what it is. That's where we are.
So if I have done the math right, and it's usually a plus one, so I think I've done it, this was my 300th shipment from Cowabunga Comics.
Oh, happy anniversary. I don't count mine, but happy anniversary to you.
Well, I log them in, and it's like, well, this is the first one, the second one, so forth. I was getting weekly shipments up until about, I don't know, July last year, thereabouts, gone monthly since. So it'll be a slow tick up from here.
Yeah. I'm probably over 300 because I still get weekly, believe it or not.
Oh, you've got to be, I would imagine, because you went over there before I did, I think.
Yeah. Happier anniversary to both of us.
Yeah. So anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool.
Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayo, and thanks again for listening.